in magic. But a few times in my life, I've seen things. Things I can't explain. And I've come to believe it's not so much what you believe. It's how hard you believe it.
Da, 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 da!
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world gone crazy!
Are you serious? Ladies and gentlemen!
It's showtime.
It's the return of one of the most iconic characters in all of film after a 34-year wait. We are returning. Indiana Jones comes back.
That's well done.
The fourth installment of this beloved, beloved series of films. Some people have been calling this the fifth one. I assume that's just like a typo or something.
Yeah,
or?
I think maybe that's because of that syndicated show in the 90s.
Oh, okay.
Young Indiana Jones.
Yeah, I think they consider that.
Okay.
It's
that
canon. It's canon.
There is one episode that Harrison Ford's in, so maybe that's the deal. But
gotta be. Couldn't be anything else.
Couldn't be anything else. Yeah. He hasn't donned the fedora and grabbed the whip since 1989, at least in film.
Well, at least not on screen, yeah.
Right, exactly. So it's Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, Harrison Ford, James Mangold stepping into the big shoes of Steven Spielberg on this one. And I'm excited to talk to you guys about it. So I'm your host, Brian Gill.
If there's one thing Harrison Ford does well, it's crash land a plane. But if there are two things that he does well, it's don that hat and whip. You know what I mean? Yeah,
that's right. That's right. It's a match made in heaven. That's what we're talking about this week. I'm Brian Gill, joined as always by my co-host, Richard Barden. And Kid Garrison, fellas, I missed you last week, and then we're recording this week late. So I've been getting like, you know, feel weird. I haven't talked to you.
Did you get to see Asteroid City yet, Brian?
I did. I loved it.
Awesome.
I loved it. I haven't listened to the episode yet. The only episodes I will ever listen to are the ones that I'm not involved in.
And you still didn't listen.
I still haven't listened, but I will. I will. I'll get to it eventually. What did you give it the grade? What was the grade for both of you?
We said it was
solid A.
It's right. Yeah, it's right there in the Mount Rushmore plus one Anderson movies.
Would say real quick before we get into Indiana Jones, I don't want to derail us, but we did say, and I'm curious on your thoughts on this, and I'm serious. The one thing we thought was out of place actually was Tom Hanks. Not that he was bad, it just felt off more than the rest. So I'm curious on your quick 20-second take on that.
Yeah.
I think that was my favorite Tom Hanks performance
in a long time.
I really liked it.
It's not that he's bad in the movie. It's just something about it was different. Like it felt
something
like
about like some people fit so well
Steve
in a Wes
Carell
Anderson
folded
movie.
In
yes.
perfectly.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Jeffrey Wright, right? It's like not even a thought. He just felt like,
I totally understand what you guys are saying. And for whatever reason, I liked that more.
Cool.
Like I said that to Lindsay when we were coming out of the movie. I was like, he did not fit seamlessly the way that typically you get with every other actor and character in an Anderson movie. But for some reason, made it jump off the screen a little bit. I thought it was a great performance from him.
Cool.
But yeah, I loved it. I had a great time with it. And that might be his warmest movie. Like it had... it was affecting more than most.
Yeah, you just felt
love
warm
Wes Anderson
during
movies.
Certain parts of it.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly.
You're not allowed to take photos during the movie, Brian. By the way,
again.
Well, that's just your opinion. Yeah,
I thought this was America.
You can as long as no one tells you to stop. Yeah. You know,
right? Cool.
Yeah, that's the way.
Don't ask, don't tell. Got it.
You're talking about Steve Carell. Thank you, because we love Steve Carell. Yes, I enjoyed Asteroid City quite a bit. So thanks for carrying on without me last week, boys. I'm gonna miss not next week, but the week after too. So that's a real bummer. I was here for The Flash, but I'll miss Asteroid City and Mission Impossible. So super sucks. I got to schedule my camps and vacations a little better next time around. Let's talk Indiana Jones. Richard and I did a throwback episode on the original trilogy with our good buddy Batman Shane a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about Raiders, we talked about Temple, we talked about Last Crusade. Kent, we've never talked, you and I, we'll ignore Richard for a moment.
We even talked Crystal Skull, by the way.
Oh, what's that?
The vodka brand from Dan Aykroyd.
Oh, okay. Okay. There we go. Yeah.
I bring that up a lot. I have a sponsorship deal with them. So I just continue to
vaguely remember that on the podcast. I don't think I've ever talked to you about Indiana Jones. What kind of a place does this series hold in your movie heart? And what's a little bit of the, give us a taste of the background on Indiana Jones for you.
This series, this character of Indiana Jones fits right in there among the most influential movies of my lifetime. I mean, top four. One of the first movies I ever remember seeing was Temple of Doom, actually, was the first one I saw.
Sure.
And I vividly remember that guy pulling that heart out and that thing catching on fire and my mind just melting. I don't know how old I was, five. I still remember it, where I was when I saw it. And it just was like, wow, this is incredible. And then obviously had my parents rent or saw Raiders of the Lost Ark, which had the big boulder scene. I was like, oh my gosh, this is the most amazing thing. And then like when you like Star Wars and Indiana Jones and you find out, like, I don't know, a few years later in your childhood, it's like, those were made by the same guys and what? And you can't believe it.
Sure.
I just owe so much to that time in Lucas and Spielberg's career on what I like and stuff like that. So what an incredible character that is. Just so inventive. I don't know if the listener knows the background of the origin of the character, but Spielberg wanted to make a Bond movie. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of right around after Jaws. And I think 1941 had flopped. And he's like, you know what? I want to do something like easy. Bond movie, right? And Lucas is like, I got something better for you. I had this character who's an archaeologist. He goes and searches for antiquities. And I think Spielberg was like, say no more. I'm in, right?
Yeah.
And the original casting was Tom Selleck, but he couldn't do it because of Magnum P.I. And I'm always wondering if this would be as successful with Tom Selleck. I think so. But Harrison Ford brings, obviously, the Harrison Fordness to it. It's just so incredible that he has those two iconic characters to his name from that time. But what an awesome series. I love any series where you can use the old map with the red line montage and it doesn't feel out of place. Yeah. Like I love a movie that can feel like a movie. And these have just such a commitment to the realism, the authenticity, even with this one, which we'll talk about. I have qualms with it. I have praise for it. But the things I liked the most about it was this felt like they were actually shooting a movie on a set with people, with cars and stunts and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's a lost art. And this feels like a return to form in some ways to that and a nod to that. But, I mean, that first, that trilogy, I rewatched it before this. I might have to put it up there as like, you know, a top three trilogy in my estimation.
Yeah.
It's that good. It's just perfect. So love it. Love it. Just quintessential Hollywood. You could fit in any really decade. You released it in the 30s or 40s or 50s or 60s or 70s or 80s. It would be successful in all of them. It's just truly amazing. So love this. And was very much looking forward to the conclusion of it.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's fair to say. Okay. Yeah. Love that. That's great. Richard, again, you and I talked about this at length on the VIP, which you can access. You can be a part of madaboutmoviespodcast.com/VIP. But for those that didn't hear that, so give me the quick version of your background on Indy and your anticipation for lack thereof, I don't know, for this movie.
Weird. I had only ever seen Crystal Skull, and I was not aware of any previous trilogy until that. Loved it. Was my favorite movie of 2008.
Obviously, right.
Now, don't remember, never saw any of these in theaters or anything before my time. Was very aware of like the mythos of them, saw bits of them, and was aware of a lot of them for, you know, my entire childhood. But I don't, for some reason, it was not ever a VHS that I had. And so like had seen them, and then like purposefully when DVDs became a thing in like adolescence, really, like probably 14 was like, oh, I need to see. I don't think I've ever seen the Indiana Jones movie.
Sure.
You know, so let me hammer through those. And then like had seen 70% of them out of sequence in weird ways, right? And like,
yeah, same.
Piece it all together through that. And then it was like, oh yeah, these are, okay, cool, done.
Sure. I was like 2, 1, 3.
I mean, rewatch them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was the order I saw them in.
Sure. Yeah, we talked about that a bit too. I think Shane may be the same as you, Kent. Yeah, so like, knew I would like them a lot, but unlike most things, did not discover it like in childhood. It was kind of what I do a lot now with bands, where it's like, you know, I'm probably going to really like Tom Petty. So in 2025, right. I'm going to listen to nothing but Tom Petty. Indiana Jones might have been the first thing I ever kind of consciously did that with.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, for me, and again, we talk about this on our pod, but the Last Crusade is the first movie that I remember seeing in theaters. And
oh, wow.
And so that was like a huge deal for me that my parents took me to see this movie. I remember at least vaguely where the theater was and being there. And then within a month, I saw Batman. My dad took me to see Batman. So that was a huge time in my life at 6 years old, is seeing this movie or seeing Last Crusade and then Batman. I definitely saw Raiders last, because Temple of Doom was on TBS or TNT or one of those all the time.
Maybe that's how I saw it. I don't even know. I just remember seeing that heart come out of
The dinner scene is the one that really creeped me out more than anything. Like when he cuts open the snake and there's all the baby snakes and
the heart sets on fire as the guy goes into the fire. I was like, what is happening?
What's happening? Yeah. it's pretty wild. Seeing Last Crusade, and I said this on the pod, and this is the last time I'll reference that, but on our VIP, I said, you know, I think I believed that there must have been 10 Indiana Jones movies before Raiders, because Raiders is such a perfect film, and the introduction to that character is so simple and so simple.
Feels like episode 10 of like a HBO series, doesn't it?
It is that, even if you were some weirdo who like hates the Indiana Jones movies, you could teach character introduction, like a masterclass in character introduction with Raiders of the Lost Ark, the way that Indy comes in, and within 5 minutes, you know everything you need to know about him. And it's a seamless, it's a perfect film. So I love this series. We've been looking forward to this movie for quite a while. I don't remember anymore when it was announced as a greenlight. It was originally greenlit as a Spielberg movie, and then eventually got handed over to Mangold, because Spielberg just had too many projects that were stacking up. And then we had the COVID delay. This has been a long time coming, I guess. So, Kent, I'll go to you first. Give me your general thoughts on Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny.
Was so much looking forward to this, fellas. Mm-hmm. And there is so much to like about
it. You're a big
this.
Jez Butterworth guy. So this was
Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Right? Just... Yeah. Fleabag every morning as I wake up to start my day. Uh-huh. It explains a lot about me, actually. I was so looking forward to this. And I don't know, I guess to summarize general thoughts, I was really, really into it the first act. Mm-hmm. Fell off in the second, pretty bad. I was like, oh no. And then it really won me over in the third act. Sure. So,
okay,
that's kind of where I fell on in general terms. I've got a bunch of notes, but I'm curious as to why Spielberg left the project. I'm always skeptical of a movie that is made just to make money, right? And I don't think that's the case for this one. I think the reason this movie was made was to make up for the last one and to give Harrison Ford a proper send-off, because they have the IP and why not, right? And it'll make money also. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was the true intention of the artists at hand here, right? Writers, producers, Kathy Kennedy. Mm-hmm. And so I felt that with this. I didn't feel, you know how many callbacks they could have done in this thing?
Sure.
How many characters could have popped up? And I was like, oh, remember this thing? And there were, of course, Easter eggs or whatever, but it did not beat you over the head with it.
Mm-hmm.
My one kind of qualm with it is, what I love about the original series is that each MacGuffin in the movie, whether it's the you know, the Holy Grail or the Ark of the Covenant or whatever, the Crystal Skull, right? They're all based on reality. They're all actual, we think, pieces of antiquities, right?
Sure.
This Archimedes thing, to my knowledge, wasn't an actual item. So a little lost a little bit for me on that front. But what they started out with, which was the Spear of Destiny, which is the first sequence in the train.
Sure.
The Spear of Destiny being the spear that supposedly pierced Jesus's side at the crucifixion, which is, you know, obviously mentioned multiple times and hasn't been located, all this kind of stuff. I was like, man, that, I don't know, maybe I would have been in more on that. I don't know why they had to do time travel, but I kind of did at the end and I was in on it. So
it
was like the execution was really good, but like, I don't know if the intention was the best. And maybe they're like, oh, this really will help set it up for future movies if we want to do more, if we have this element. And I understand that part, but there's a little, like a 2% multiverse fatigue with this movie. And I did not want that at all with this. So that, that was a little bit of a qualm, but man, James Mangold, I saw a tweet after I left this movie and I can't stop thinking about it. And I want your guys' opinion. It said, James Mangold doesn't have a fun bone in his body. And I was thinking about that. I was like, is that true? Because would this have been a more fun movie with Spielberg at the helm? Same script. Because I think like in the inherent energy of Spielberg's direction, it's fun. The jokes land, right? Everything, the physical gags work. I'm not to say this isn't well made. I'm just wondering if it would have been a more fun energy with Spielberg.
Yeah, that's a, I hadn't thought of it that way, but that is an interesting, it's an interesting way.
And I was trying to think of his older movies. I'm like, Ford Ferrari's pretty fun, but is it that fun? I was trying to think, you know?
I mean, you could probably make a case that Ford v Ferrari, that the fun and certainly that the humor in that movie is turning Matt Damon and Christian Bale loose, both of whom are, Matt Damon we know as one of the funnier guys in the business right now, and I think Christian Bale, if you don't know that, you've maybe kind of missed out, because he's really, really quick and witty and a funny guy when he's not on the set of Terminator Salvation or whatever. But just an interesting thought. Let's circle back to that in a second. Sure. Arby, I'll go last on general thoughts and such. What's the vibe for you? How do you feel this hit the anticipation or not? And what, you know, give us your general thoughts on Dial of Destiny before we get into spoilers and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird place to put yourself in time, because you're living in a world that is simultaneously 2023, where you're seeing the movie, and the 40s and the 60s and the last Indiana Jones and the 80s when the other Indiana Jones coming out. And I mean all that because these all connote certain times in your life, right? And then times in history, you have the Nazi stuff. You have this movie, obviously, is in, a lot of it's in the 60s, late 60s. But you also, you can't help but be reminded of the 80s with when these were huge and the biggest, you know, probably pop culture thing, other than when Star Wars dipped into the 80s a bit, going, you know. You think of when they tried to do this 15 years ago or whenever that was, you know? So it's like, it's a weird, I don't mean to be, I'm not trying to go like, I know this isn't, Joe Rogan's on the next episode, on the Pirates episode. I'm not trying to get too trippy with it, but it was this odd, in my brain, this odd experience of time and where I am watching this. So you're watching it all through that prism of these things, and not to be crass, but like, it's also an actor, a lead actor who's 80.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. And so you're thinking about his entire career. You're thinking of what this means. Is this his kind of final lap around? He's also de-aged in parts of it. So you can't help but think about, I don't know. The whole time I'm just thinking about time. What does time mean? this weird moment in an Indiana Jones movie in this tiny movie theater. Okay. So that is my overall think of like, this is such an interesting study in kind of what pop culture can mean across 100 years, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
Because of that, it's like, it took me a bit to get into the movie because I'm like thinking about that a lot during it. Maybe that's just my own weird scatterbrain and stuff. I don't hold that against the movie at all. I'm not saying it's slow rolling. I just mean that's, and then you kind of get into it and you're right, Kent. This is definitely a very good version of what is all often most of the time, a very bad thing where you go, oh man, I bet there was minimum of 11 writers of this thing. You know, when you're doing those swings throughout it, you're like, that was a cool 4 minutes. That was a mediocre 4 minutes. That was a great 4 minutes. That sucked. You know, you're doing that for a while. It had a little bit of that. Definitely a lot of rewrite-itis for sure. I love Mangold for what maybe he lacks in fun for whatever that is. I get that with some of the Wolverine things. But, Ford versus Ferguson, I didn't find this lacking in fun. I thought the intensity worked because the character, you know, it's hard to have a lot of fun when you're 80. Just is for me. Yeah. I mean, I get that. It's like, it's, he's not going to be as, swaggery or swashbuckling, you know, at that. That's no one's fault. So, but you're right. There's things with the script that are less fun. You know, you have the death off screen and things like that, which we can talk about. But yeah, I actually found it pretty tonally right for the actor, the character, all of that. It ended up coming out of it really kind of digging it, even though there were, you know, if you were to add them together, 30 minutes of time in there that were probably not great, nothing Crystal Scully, but like, this is fine. But then the stuff that worked for me really worked, and I ended up going, oh, I don't want any more of these. But that didn't ruin the first three at all for me. It was like kind of a cool, you know, they had a, years ago, I remember playing it for some reason. I don't know why I own this, but because you guys know this is not me at all, what I'm about to say. Mm. They had a Lego Indiana Jones video game.
My favorite Game Boy game. It's like the only Game Boy game I ever played consistently was that Lego Indiana Jones. It's so good. See,
I played on Xbox.
Oh, nice.
And for whatever reason, and it has, it's definitely, I mean, it takes you to the plot of the movies, but it has some kind of like almost side things to it.
Sure.
And this felt, with that, it was like, okay, cool. This is a good annex of this world. It doesn't ruin the first three. Whereas I think the fourth one does, with just, you know, we've talked about it, like, you know, the aliens being involved and things, it kind of ruins the logic of the universe in some ways, which is the biggest, not that it's a bad movie. It is, but that's not what people I think are offended by about it. It's that it's like, it changes the algebra of what Indiana Jones is. This kind of still pushes up against that wall, but also in a more tonally correct Indiana Jones way. So I came out liking it. So sorry, very long winded, but that's my.
No, it was great. That was a lot of really good stuff.
Yeah.
I'm with you guys. I really dug the first act. The second act dragged and it kind of, I don't know that I got necessarily overly worried because we started strong enough to where it felt like, as long as it's just isn't just a complete disaster down the stretch, I'm gonna be fine with it. You know, I'm gonna come out feeling like, all right, we closed that chapter and it was cool, and I loved seeing him on screen and again in that role, and that's great. But the second act definitely has some dips, and I think just kind of gets a little bit muddled. And to your point, Richard, it definitely felt like this thing's been rewritten so many times that like we got to get this scene in here, or more like, hey, I looked at your screen at the script you sent me. I did not like anything in this act, but hey, it was cool when we were on a boat in the ocean. So let's keep that, and let's add in this, and let's make sure, you know, all this kind of stuff. It just was a little bit muddled, and I think that I like Phoebe Waller-Bridge. I ultimately liked her character. Her character in the second act was kind of a little bit difficult.
The dialogue in the second act is what killed me. It wasn't the plotting or anything. It was like, man, they're really struggling to come up with,
I agree,
some funny one-liners and all that. All the stuff you want a second act to carry the momentum, it did not for me on a scripting standpoint.
For sure. I can see that. But the third act I loved, and I thought it closed it very well, not just with the character. It closed the movie and the series well, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And Richard, I think you're right too, that something that I was impressed with was that the to me at least, they kind of found the right chord on showing Indiana Jones to be a very old person at this point without it becoming like a Clint Eastwood, you know, like I think of like Trouble with the Curve, but him, it opens with him talking to his junk because he can't pee, you know, and just grunting all the time and stuff. And I've think opened
that podcast, the podcast like that a few times.
Yeah, it's true. Who among us, you know, but I thought it did
Richard,
a good job.
You're 36, dude.
Yeah, you need to see some help, my man.
Nah, just a little age comes for us all.
He's undefeated, you know, Father Time. No, it was, I think it struck the right balance, at least for me, on showing that this is an old person at this point and an old character, but without it just being like a constant, we get it, you're old, you know? And that was something that I was nervous about coming in. So to avoid that, I thought was pretty great to let him be, to let that character have like some real, some grief and some guilt and some kind of retrospective, you know, and thinking back on his life. That's not part of any of these movies really up to this point, but it fits here and it's right, I think, for an 80-year-old adventurer to be facing his, you know, his mortality and whatnot. So I quite liked that. But yeah, the end worked for me so much better than I was a little nervous, Kent, as you mentioned, when you see
where it's going. Yeah, you're like,
yeah,
oh,
when
no.
It becomes clear we're gonna go back in time.
Yeah.
I was very nervous at that point. I was like, oh guys, please land this plane, as it were. Because
good thing Harrison Ford wasn't driving it.
Exactly.
It's like
exactly.
He knew.
Yeah. But I think overall it kind of there's moments that kind of walk the line of, as it were. Sorry, I didn't mean that mangled. Got him, Yahtzee. The unintentional Yahtzee, those are rare. But I think it walked up to that line at points of we're kind of going over, we're jumping the shark, we're going a little too far with this, but ultimately brought it back. And then I think that the close is pretty great, actually. So it sold me on a movie that I really enjoyed and was going to probably was likely to really enjoy regardless. Went from, hey, I'm having a good time with this, and this is a fitting end to this character that I really like, and this series that I really like. From that to actually, I really liked this. I really loved where we ended up with this thing, and really, that's probably all you can ask for at this point. There wasn't a world where this was going to be Last Crusade or Raiders of the Lost Ark or whatever, because we're talking about two of the greatest movies of the decade, if not all time, and so that's a standard that was very, very unlikely to be met, you know. So for it to do what it did and come out strong, I feel like at the end, I'm satisfied with that, and I'm happy with where we ended up. I think probably you should just say, hey, spoilers from here on out, just in case they come up in conversation. Kent, you said you got a bunch of notes. I'm gonna go to you, man. What comes out? What do you want to talk about here?
First thing I want to ask you guys about was the de-aging. What'd you guys think of it?
Thought it was about as good as it gets right now. This still isn't perfect technology.
Yeah, we're still. It looked
incredible.
1999 of it.
Yeah, for sure. I thought it looked incredible when he was not talking. When he started talking, that's when I feel like you can start to see the difference, and that this isn't, you know, this is CGI.
Question for you: did that have to do with the voice? Because it didn't seem like they changed the voice at all. It feels like they should have maybe pitched it up like 0.01 semitones or whatever. Just to kind of match the younger sounding voice. It sounded like it was just he did ADR and that was it. Or he acted on set and that was it. And they replaced the face and didn't do anything else. Yeah. Maybe that could have helped. You know that kind of in the digital video world, the rule is always like your video can look like crap as long as it sounds good, you know, because people can get over bad sound if they can have bad visuals, if they have good sound to go with it. But if your video looks great, but sounds like crap, it's going to change people's perception way more than the opposite. So maybe that was why it didn't sell me as hard as I expected it to, was because of the voice. Maybe it's like a subconscious thing there. Sure. But I thought that scene, I mean, the opening sequence when they pull the bag over the head and it's him and all that dark, really harsh, intentional lighting, like that looked incredible. I couldn't believe mm-hmm. that they were able to make that look so flawless with like headlights shining in his face and all these different things happening around him. Usually when you see that effect made, it's like a very controlled environment or, you know, a bright room and you got to do it in a certain way. This seems like, mm-hmm. okay, anything's possible now. And the reason they were able to do it with Harrison Ford the way they did was because Lucasfilm has a huge archive of footage of him from Star Wars and Indiana Jones and all of the stuff they didn't use in those movies, all the
nice
auditions, you know? And so they just go through and digitally scan all of that stuff in as high resolution as possible. And pretty much they have every lighting scenario already covered. And the computer does the rest of the work, right? It's an incredible thing now, but it opens up that huge question of like, would you rather this been a whole movie of young Indiana Jones again, right? Like, just do it like Raiders of the Lost Ark, part two, or like the next day kind of a thing. That would have been interesting. I don't know. This does give him a send off in a proper way, but like it opens the question up of, like, okay, once you have the audio source, right? Mm-hmm. And once you have mm-hmm. the video data, all you kind of need is a guy that has the body shape and you can kind of do anything, you know, living or past, you know, as long as you have the data to do it. So I'm sure it's, you know, we're opening, just beginning to open up Pandora's box of what is possible with this deepfake technology, where don't be surprised if you see a Heath Ledger movie come out and he's in it, you know, or something like that, because they have the data to do it. And that is scary.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there's still, I don't know if you have any thoughts on this, Richard. But it's still an uncanny valley thing to me. Like it doesn't,
it's
I'm
like an
fine
filter.
I'm fine to deal with it for a part of the movie, especially when I understand that it is necessary for the narrative of the movie, you know, for the script to work, here's what we're going to do. You can sell me on that. I mean, at least at this point, I'm not doing a whole movie. If the whole bit of the movie, the whole genesis of the movie is, you know, young Laurence of Olivier or something, you know, I'm not real into that. Like I can handle it for a few minutes here and there as part of this bigger movie that we're selling, but it's that's a tough selling point to me at this point. I don't know if you have any thoughts on the technology or not, Richard.
Yeah, I mean, I couple things on this, on that, how they used it. I'm not a huge fan of it in general, but I do like, one, the amount they used it was at least, I mean, maybe a little less would have been fine, but it wasn't egregious. But I also like they led with it. Okay, cool. Boom, boom, mm-hmm, boom. Mm-hmm. We got this. Okay, cool. And that way you don't have the like as much going back and forth where you have that juxtaposition really obviously. It's like, cool, we're going to do this for 11 minutes and then we're back in, you know, the 60s and he's old. I don't know. I like that more.
Sure. Sure.
Okay. It's a good way to do it. But it's still not there yet to me.
Next thing I had here, I was trying really hard to ignore the fact that like I've seen the Mythbusters where they debunk the Archimedes death ray like multiple times, and it's a big big part of this movie. Like he's teaching it in class and goes and sees it in the, you know, at the end of the movie, and so I was like, okay, like we, I don't know, could you have thought of something else that maybe like we don't all know is BS? That would be preferred. And I was wondering, like, what's going to make Indiana Jones go back to his old ways? Like, what's going to be the spur, right? That makes him, makes him put the hat back on again, right? And in the movie, Phoebe Waller-Bridge says, why should I go? So I can get famous and you can have one last ride.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was waiting for, like, a punchline the other way. And it never happened. So I think that's why he's like, one last ride. Do you not know who you're talking to? Do you know what I've done in the past? I'm done, you know, like that. So it's like the whole motivation for getting back out there seemed kind of like, Lame.
Okay.
I thought it was going to be much more like he finds out something about Marion or Short Round or something, you know? Yeah. And it's like, oh, now I have to go save somebody that I care about, or I have to go my father or something, you know? Yeah, it's kind of...
I think I actually like this better because they didn't do a big moment of him putting the hat back on. He's really, against his will, gets thrown into the mix here, you know? Because it's, all right, I'll help you find this. I'll give you the dial because I know where it is, and, you know, I'll hand that off to you. But then before he can really decide whether he's in or out on an adventure, they're getting attacked in the library, and then... he's, you know, racing a horse during the middle of the parade, which I thought was a pretty cool scene. And you're kind of in it at that point, and he doesn't really have a choice to get in or out. So I dug that.
That is
and,
true. Yeah,
and it's,
true.
it's only, I also thought the other way we could end up going was that he would just feel like overly protective of his goddaughter or whatever. And he is, but again, it was a place where I felt like it kind of struck the right chord of, he is protective of this girl, but he's almost like he's just mad at her half the time, you know, and just kind of, I don't know if ashamed is the right word, but just kind of giving her crap for her life choices and whatnot. So they didn't hit that too hard either, which I felt like was the right note. It just gives you these moments where he feels some guilt about this, but then also he's dealing with the guilt of the death of his son. And so he kind of touches into it a bit here and there, but it's not a major part of the, it's not like melodrama, you know, through the course of the movie. And I thought that I liked that too. So, yeah, I kind of dig the reason for him. It's not even a reason, the way that he gets drawn into all this. I thought it worked for me at least.
What did you think of them not having a romantic lead opposite Indy in this one? 'Cause that seems to be something that really carries energy in the first three, they have this palpable like romanticism to them, almost like this Hitchcockian romance aspect. And this one didn't have that. And they're like, okay, we need him to be with two people and one of them needs to be a kid. They got that right. Right. I wondered like how much a difference would have made if there had been like this, I don't know, kind of budding relationship along the lines. Because I mean, this, yeah, Marion was important to him, but like Kate Capshaw's in the next movie, right? Or the movie, I guess prequel movie, right? So it's not like that's the only woman in his life that we know he had, you know, feelings for or whatever. But that was just a noticeable difference from the first few, was the lack of like a true romantic lead opposite that. That's just a trope that I thought these movies did well.
To me, that was just an example of like, hey, this guy, we have to change the character because he's very old. Like, this is an old guy who, and he's still, not that, I mean, Harrison Ford is still a great looking guy. I think that it brings it, when we get to the end and we have this moment with her, I would rather have that moment and not have him romantically engaged with somebody than the other way around.
For this movie, yeah, but not like if Marion thing had not happened, I'm wondering if that would have been better.
Yeah, it's always a little convoluted with his kind of personal romantic allegiances, you know, which is one thing I think that Crystal Skull kind of does in a humorous way. Because of the surprise of that. Executed terribly, but it's always kind of movie to movie, and then they have to kind of cobble together this, well, no, he's this, you know, he has these long standing relationships across, again, time. Mm-hmm. And it's just a hard without you know what I just fixed it. Indiana Jones multiverse. Done.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
So I feel like this one, it's all Marion.
You laugh, but all... like I feel like that's what the time travel was opening up. I feel like, I mean, not a good spoiler really, but he puts the hat back on at the end of the movie. So yep.
Always does.
He might have talked to Kathy and be like, "You want to make more of these? Go for it. I'll be in Montana. Use my likeness, whatever you need to do. I'll be at the premiere. I'll promote it, whatever you
I
need.
Think yeah. After this opening, I don't think Miss Kennedy's going to be making those decisions.
Yeah, Kathy. Tough.
Yeah, I would say this is in, that box office, there's a lot of studios that are going to be learning some lessons, I hope, from this summer.
Why do you think that is? How much should it have made for it to be a success opening week?
Well, first off, it can't cost $300 million is the bigger problem. Okay.
Well, so, the reason is because they shot it, you know? I mean, it's like, you can't have it both ways. You can either shoot it and make it look like you want it and cost a lot, or
spend
$100 million and it's going to be a CG fest, you know?
Yeah. It's and there's some COVID delays in there, and there's some things, but there's a lot of fat in that budget for a lot of things. So I think that is the biggest thing, that it's just like it's set up to fail. Sure. Anything at $300 million is just it's just in this world is just tough, you know, when there's only unless it's 99% coming in, all the buzz is unbelievable, and it's a character that we're so excited to see or whatever. It's going to be tough to do at that budget, but that's where you put that. That's where I think Mr. Iger comes in and says, all right, Lucasfilm, why was this? I want it itemized. Like, why was this? Yeah. If this was $180 million, okay, we're good.
Sure. Yeah.
Make 60. Yeah. We made 130 international. We got a couple weeks to make up the difference. All right, we're fine. This thing's going to top out at $500 million. Cool. You know?
Right. Right.
But when this is 300 and it's got to double that to make it all, you know, it's just like, all right.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think
for sure.
I honestly don't think the thinking was, I mean, the last one made $1 billion and it was terrible.
Yeah.
You know, and again, yeah, it's not 2004. Whole different world.
Yeah.
Right. Right. I mean, but at the same time, proof is in the pudding that like even in 2000, even 25 years after the last one or whatever it was, people still cared about Harrison Ford. And
for sure.
He's still, you know, like I don't know. Didn't I say that a few weeks ago that like he is still in like the top five just most like loved movie stars in the world.
Sure. Yeah. And that's why it made $60 million. Otherwise it would have made 11.
Yeah.
Like that's where we are now. Yep. So like that totally, that's fair. And he deserved his whatever money he made on it. But like unless it was like $150 million, but, which, you know, none of us are going to begrudge him for that. But like, yeah, that's the thing is for sure he is, but that, and it's a very older skewing property. We're even seeing that with like, talk about that with Mission Impossible, you know, that's a really older audience surprisingly. And you know, that's going to do well, but like the last one, the over under on it right now in Vegas is like $100 million. The last Mission Impossible made 90.
Yeah.
And it's not Top Gun. It's not something people now. Right. There will be a Top Gun boost because a lot of people went and saw Top Gun and were like, you know who's awesome? Tom Cruise.
Right.
And we'll go see this, and maybe it may go over on the 100, but it's not going to do 200 opening weekend. And you know, but it costs like 100 with all that stuff, all that Tom Cruisey stuff was like $111 million less than this movie. That's
but the difference crazy. Is this is it's all period. You know,
no, I know.
It's like 25 locations and it's all period.
Right.
You can't green light that post like 2016. Yep. Like that's the thing. You just go, well, go write it again. And make it to where I can make it for 190 million. God forbid I make it for sure. 200 million.
I'm willing to bet like the delays cost them $100 million.
For sure.
That's totally fair. And I write that in. I think that's fine. Like, that's not their fault.
But he got away from them a little bit, and you can, That is what it is, but and there are some outside factors too. Opening at Cannes was a huge mistake.
Oh,
100%. I still don't understand,
because this is probably 84 on Rotten Tomatoes or something without that, right?
Yeah, closer to at least,
or at least like whatever the emotional equation of that is. Like it comes in with that kind of buzz, but that killed.
And for whatever reason. Because like we talk all the time about stuff here that we are aware of that doesn't permeate like
that's my biggest question.
Average viewers,
like my biggest question.
Moms don't know.
Everyone
about
in my life wanted to see this. You know,
well, yeah.
It's so
opposite for me.
for me, the issue was I feel like the poor opening at Cannes, for whatever reason, that kind of permeated into the broader culture, and people thought, oh, this is a bust. And with the last one being as poorly received as it was, I think a lot of people just said, okay, well, this sucks, so I'm not even going to bother going to see it. That was a mistake, opening it where they did. The other thing, too, is just there are so many movies out right now, and we're getting a little bit of the backlog from COVID. I think this is probably the last summer where we're kind of catching up through the course of this year with those movies that were pushed last year or, you know, even the year before. Like, if you look at the overall box office of this weekend, it wasn't bad when you look at the whole, like every, you know, top 10, and hey, that's a lot of money that went out. It spread out over maybe not 10 movies, but over 6 or 8 movies. And that's something that they're going to have to, that I think has to go into the algorithm too, Richard, when you're talking about the budget on these things, because I'm 100% with you. I think the number one thing is we have to stop spending so much money to make these movies. And I understand the economy's rough and inflation and all that kind of crap. But like, hey, Harrison Ford, you're totally right. Harrison Ford, you're going to make your money. Anyone else who's not like one of these people, you make less than you did on the last movie. I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. And also, hey, the movie is 1 hour and 50 minutes, not 2 hours and 30 minutes. Like, this is, we got to get this stuff
that
cut
worries
down.
Me on MI too. Like, it's exciting. Yeah. I mean, that's getting good buzz. Right.
And it's part one too.
And it's like, part one.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, this has got to be part of the crazy math is to look at it and say, how many weeks is this going to crush at the box office? Is it 1 week? Is it 2 weeks? Is it 3 weeks? Because there's so many movies coming out every weekend right now. And so I think they're just it's like a little bit of cannibalism going on amongst all of these, you know, and obviously like studios competing, that's, you know, that goes back to the invention of film, you know, but it's been kind of a stacked summer. And I think that's definitely hurt each of these movies, like overall draw.
Walt Disney has 3 movies out right now.
For sure. Yeah. And they got Haunted Mansion coming in a couple of weeks. And so, you know, I mean, Barbie and Oppenheimer, we joked about it a million times about how neither one of them moved off of that weekend. That does not happen most of the time. It's just that I think this year is so jammed with movies that have been delayed.
Very smartly, both, you know,
they made a meme of it.
Made it a thing. Like, this is, go see these together. It's the ultimate movie weekend, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Which is, I think, very smart on both parts. I'm I think Barbie's going to kill.
Yeah.
I think
that's a movie that everyone in my life is talking to me about. Like, everyone.
You don't have a lot of friends with like young daughters, do you? Because my nieces are crushed that they might not be able to see it because of the
because they're PG-13. Sure.
Yeah. Because it is hard to explain that to a kid.
Like, it is.
It's
no, that is
not the Barbie movie. It's not even the same as like Batman. You'll understand someday. It's completely different. It's
what?
Like, it's not, hey, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are going to say damn a few times in this movie and we got to talk about that with our kid. This is fully not, it's not what you think it is at all. It is not for
it's
kids.
It's a satirical look on like consumer culture, right?
Right. Yeah. And if there's anything 6-year-olds understand, it's satire. So,
I know. But I just, every adult I know is so excited for that. Oppenheimer is that thing of like,
I'm nervous.
40 million. Right. And be like, oh my God, this flopped. Or make, you know, 190.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I
think it all depends on the buzz.
I lean more towards 40 than 190. I don't think it's going to like totally crush. It'll probably be somewhere in the middle, but like, it's one of those that.
That one feels like if it debuts at Rotten Tomatoes, like over 85%, it's going to make a ton.
That's the thing.
If it's like hovering on 60, it's like, oh no, it'll probably make 50 million.
Yeah, totally.
Because people aren't going to sit through 3 hours to see like a, you know, debatably good movie, but they will if it's like, no, this is you know, Titanic. And what's so funny will be the people that buy into the meme of the Barbie v. Oppenheimer and they go see Barbie first and they just have heard of Oppenheimer and they just go see it and it's just like, we did what? It just like completely melts their brain.
Yeah. I said in the Discord today that I think I'm going to get on an Oppenheimer denier train just to have fun with that conspiracy.
That's a good bit. I'm in on that one. I was wondering, all right. Did Brian, this is a question for you.
Sure.
Did is this a real moment in the movie? Did Indiana Jones Forrest Gump, hell no, we won't go? Was that what happened?
Yeah,
it's a little bit of that. Yeah.
What?
There was a sign though in the back that said "Hell no, we won't go." So
there was.
He just started the chant. He didn't invent it. Okay. It's not like
I thought they were saying he invented.
It's not like the smiley face T-shirt.
Yeah.
So
he just stumbled into a parade. Started. He said a guy was holding on to him. He said, "We won't go." And then somebody heard it. And
yeah.
Gosh. Yeah. That's what it felt like.
That's in hindsight. I think that's the one that offends me the most in Forrest Gump is the T-shirt. I hate that. I hate it so much.
And there's some, that there's no reason for that to be, to be a part of the movie in any capacity. The line I loved the most in the movie, this is like the peak bad dialogue moment for me, was, "What you've got here is Pandora's box." Mads Mikkelsen. "No, it's my box." Like that moment with Spielberg would have worked.
Sure.
For me here, it was like, oh no, that was bad.
Yeah. The dialogue is a little rushed. It's a little rusty. It's just not quite, it doesn't click the way I do think. I mean, I said this right after the movie. Like, I think it's missing. I think Mangold is an incredible director, and Logan, I think you can make a case, is the best superhero movie ever. And Ford v Ferrari is unbelievable. And he's made some other really good movies along the line. I don't know if Spielberg has like that Spielberg magic anymore, because he also is an old man at this point. It is missing just a touch of that.
Like, weirdly, and I like jokingly am the Spielberg hater on this because I'm not as high on a few movies as you guys, but obviously I think it's great. But like, weirdly, zero box office pull anymore.
Yeah.
Like, for whatever, I don't think that's necessarily like indicative. Spielberg.
Yeah.
Not indicative of him, but like, people don't go see director movies. Like, not like, oh, I like this director anymore. That is a thing. Like, it is.
Nolan and Peele are kind of the, I mean, we'll see what happens with Greta, but yeah, I mean, we've talked previously. Nolan, one of the reasons why Nolan gets to do Oppenheimer, which I agree with you guys, I lean more towards this, like, 40 million might be high. The reason he gets to do that is because he is sort of an industry unto himself. And there are so few directors that have that play.
Yeah.
Anymore. You can still, Spielberg and Scorsese and anybody, you know, these guys can make the movie and it will get accolades and maybe awards and acclaim and everything. But yeah, you're right.
You get it with Fablemans.
The property is what sells.
Yeah. Fablemans, whatever. But like, West Side Story was like an alarming, like, uh-oh.
Yeah,
you say that, but if he makes Ready Player One, Two, that's gonna bank.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
Not for what it would cost. Yeah, if he could make it for $50 million, sure. But like, that thing's gonna cost $250 million. I don't think any studio is gonna sign up to do that. Personally,
not $250 million. No way. Yeah,
it's the first one. But like, if this costs $322 million, like that's what that's gonna cost, and like. Yeah. That's, no one's going to do that. Like he can't, he might, there's a thing where it like gets buzz. And
first one costs 155.
Okay. But like, everything's up right now.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, I'm just saying, like, that's a $200 million movie. And I don't think any studio is writing that check right now for him. And it's not like, again, that's, I'm not taking a shot at him. I'm really not. I'm just saying,
that's why Scorsese's doing Apple or whatever, Netflix. Those
you have to have these companies like subsidize you almost, which is depressing. Sure. Yep. Unless you can like have like a great, honestly, it's like if Ready Player One, which is funny because that's what the whole movie is, but it's like if they could have a great meme, then maybe it makes like 600 million and it's fine. But like, that's so weird now. It's not.
Yeah,
that's what creates the momentum. Not that the greatest director, popcorn director ever, is making it. Like, that just like doesn't matter.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's a weird time.
That one is interesting to see if they'll return to that IP at some point. I feel like the second
book was pretty crappy. I don't know. That was,
I feel like a lot of kids had come around to that one, like didn't see it in the theater and like saw it on TV, and it's like it still seems to be like the ultimate fantasy for video game
for
culture.
Sure. But Kent, to that point though, like I think with the younger generation than us, I feel really old. I mean, when I'm talking 28 through 13, they didn't see in theaters. They just saw it on TV or whatever, and they're more than happy to do that again.
Yep.
Yeah.
So like,
no, that's 100%.
So yeah. Why?
And no TJ Miller this time. So
you're right. But like, how do you finance that without another model of some kind of VOD that works or something? They're just like, every kid is just like, yeah, of course. No, I'll just see it on my Switch whenever that happens. I don't need to see it. Right. You know, like, how do you? Yeah. So that's the problem.
Which makes it even more incredible that the Mario Brothers movie made like,
100%.
Like I still can't believe it made like, I guess but, look when that weekend came, it's like, oh yeah, it made that much money. But even 6 months later, looking back, it's like it made that much money.
Yeah,
seems like the industry has changed in 6 months to a point where that was an like impossibility.
It's like, now it's not like it's. This might be Kent. You might push back on this because you would know this better than me. But now it's no longer like making these movies that are successful in the box office. It's not like the logic of making a great record. It's now like making whatever the weird mystery is of a top 40 hit. And like, if you can crack that, you can still make money at the box office, but like, it's much more tricky. Like there's no, like, you don't know, like, hey, if I just make something good.
I know. I know what you mean. It's like it's the like music industry now versus like, it was in the 1970s.
Right.
How you know, you release a great country rock album in the 70s. People would find it, right? Be your fan. Sure. But now it's like, unless you have that hit. It's not like
Mario's a new exciting thing, but something about that.
Yeah.
Like a weird, you know, like Baby Shark just captured.
Sure.
Everyone 13 and under for whatever reason. And like, I just don't know how you, and maybe you can, but like, how do you wrangle that to replicate it? Because like, that's the problem right now is that you're right. That movie did great. And how do you replicate that for Ready Player One or for whatever? It's hard. I don't envy the people that are having to make those decisions because it seems so like up to these weird gods of social media or buzz or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was this untouchable to you guys? Should they have done this?
Yeah, Last Crusade is a perfect movie. You could have said that's the end of it, we're never going back again. You could also talk me into a multiverse reality where they came back and did another one in 93 and another one in 98 and another, and they just kept, they made it into a Bond movie because the Ford Spielberg mix and really just this character so iconic, and those movies can be so much fun that if you had an interesting archaeological story to work from, then you could keep doing them. But I think after, and one of y'all may have already kind of touched on this, but after the hypothetical fourth movie, I think that there's a sense of just like, hey, we gotta end this right. Like we can't let that be the end.
When something from your movie becomes the movie version of Jump the Shark, you've gotta write that wrong somehow, right?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah, I mean, and I mean, I think some of the impetus for doing this was, I mean, there was a story going around over the last couple weeks or months, or whatever, of Ford essentially telling Spielberg, hey, if we're going to do this, we have to do it because I'm freaking old, man. Like, I've got to, I can't.
It's not getting any younger. I can't keep if you're going to do it now, right?
So I think that, and I think you've seen that too with, I know Richard and we talked a little bit on the throwback episode about like kind of grumpy old man Harrison Ford. And, you know, your mileage may vary on how much or how little you like that bit. I think that this press tour really showed that I think this is the thing he cares the most about of all of his movies and his characters.
He has the most pride in this. Yeah.
I think it really meant something to him to try to go out on a high, and obviously the you know, Crystal Skull was not that. And so
Brian, I think that's a great point. And I think he was really queued up to do that in even a bigger way. And it's a bummer that it's the writer's strike right now.
Yeah, it's true. Because totally it's true. Just 100%. Okay, I didn't even think about that. Like, you're right. Doing
podcasts and stuff. But like, obviously the these talk shows and things have diminishing audiences. And
that's
whatever,
so
but
true.
It's still, you know, he is a movie star. If he goes on to stuff, even, you know, if he does carpool karaoke or whatever,
right?
You know, that does that get it from 60 to 90? And that's like a big difference.
Did you see weekend, maybe the interview clip of him? It was like the end of the interview at the junket. I think it was Entertainment Weekly. And there she was like, all right, thank you for your time. And he was like, all right, I guess the only thing left to do now is talk about our dogs. What kind of dog do you have?
Yeah.
And he was like he was like, oh my God, it's okay. It was like the most wholesome thing I've ever seen a celebrity do. Yeah. It was so genuine. It was like, okay, now that the cameras are off, let me see your dog. It was like, oh, what a freaking American trait. Oh, that's so, I didn't even think about him not being on like Kimmel or anything like that. Yeah, man, that exactly. is so true.
And that's a big
thing for like middle America to like know this movie's coming out. Like my mom will watch The Tonight Show every night, right? Or whatever it is. And that's like the biggest,
Harrison Ford,
that's one of the biggest reminders. Thing. Yeah. In like the regular society of, hey, this thing's coming out and you should go see it. Right. With the, with the older generation, who's not as hashtag online as we are.
But that's like the key audience for
Indiana Jones. Exactly. Bummer, that's the target audience for this. Sure. Right. For sure. That's such a good point.
So
yeah, that's great. I didn't thought about that at all. Yeah.
Yep. Oh, if only he could have done Hot Ones.
Oh, he can do it. They don't have writers, I think.
Yeah, no, I know.
But, man, that would be pretty great.
I think Sean Evans does it all. So maybe he's standing by his.
That's his friend, by the way. That's my vote when Fallon flames out.
Oh, Sean Evans, sign me up, dude. Yeah.
Sean Evans, but it's just Hot Ones every night.
Just do Hot Ones, the variety show, and have a musical guest. Tonight Show.
And he just slowly wants to kill himself because he's like, he's on guest two, you know, the second lead on a Gossip Girl remake, and he's just having to hammer like a ghost pepper.
That is the one bit I thought would die like 4 years ago. And it's still going strong. And you know why? Is because of the guests they get. It's like,
It's just they book great.
It's like, okay, I'll watch Pedro Pascal do this. You know, it's like the timing of when they get the people is always the perfect
amount of business to give those people to make it not a podcast.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, you don't want to give them too much to do.
You're going to be there 25 minutes. Yeah.
It's right. And I heard him. He was actually on Pardon My Take of all things a couple weeks ago. And he said the key to their show. And he was like, it was a total accident. It reminds me of something we would have lucked into on a grander scale. Mm-hmm. He's like, we were broke and all we could have when we started it, because it was, you know, a food blog or whatever. And he's like, so we had a black background and two cameras. You know, it's just like a black curtain and a table. And he's like, because of that, I can go to every Ritz-Carlton in the U.S.
and shoot an episode.
And shoot an episode there. I just hang up a black curtain and put it, you know, sit at a table and eat wings. And it looks like we're in a studio. And he's like, I can go to these people. And he's total luck. God, it was not a purposeful choice. It was literally just because we had $30 for the set.
That's the way to do it. That's how you get anybody. Yeah. We'll come to he's you. Like, just let us know when you're doing your junket. Yeah.
He's like, I just get an airline ticket. He's like, I have a bag with a black curtain in it and hot sauces. And I can just.
Oh my gosh, dude.
You're at the best. Chateau Marmont. Done. I'll be there in 20 minutes. Like, let's do it. And like, that's genius. So funny.
That's so odd. That's like the best version of a makeshift, like.
Yeah.
DIY talk show I've ever seen. Totally. And it complex.
I always assumed, I mean, I was stupid. I watch a million of those. I always assumed they came to him, but no, he goes to them. Yeah.
I think for a time they probably did. Yeah. But you've mentioned this, Brian, the old angry Harrison Ford. Was this Indiana Jones to you stoic, heroic, or fumbling, bumbling? Because first three Indiana Jones, definitely stoic, heroic. But once Indiana Jones did the old celery trick, I was like, oh, he's fumbling, bumbling.
Yeah, it was funny. You know, I had a moment, and I don't remember the exact moment in this movie, but there was a point where he's kind of getting outclassed by whatever's happening, and he is a little stumbling, fumbling, bumbling. There was a 1 second my brain said, what are we doing here? Like, this is Indiana freaking Jones. Like, we gotta get, and then the other part, and then immediately the other side of my brain said, he's 80 and he's not a superhero and it's okay.
Yeah.
Not only is it okay, I think actually I'm pro him not having all the physical answers to this thing. Like, I mean, really this comes down to him having the intelligent answer, like the brain, to like figure out, oh, this, you know, this, the Archimedes di- didn't work. We're not going
back.
Who
has chewing gum?
Then we're going. Yeah, exactly. It was a little MacGruber-y.
I was
such,
like, do you have a minor in chemistry also?
But I dug that. I was I had a moment of like, this is not my Indiana Jones. And then immediately I was like, right, because he's 80. And like my, like when I sit up for my desk after we're done recording, like my hip is going to pop, you know, and I'm going to creak, and it's like I'm halfway to that. So it, yeah, he's not a superhero.
But at,
so I dig that.
Is there a version of this movie where he's not in any stunts and Indiana Jones is just like the professor? Would that work? Like if they did another one of these, but and it had Harrison Ford, but he was like not, you know, sure, in Indiana Jonesing all the time. He was just the advisor.
I think that becomes passing the torch, and I don't want to pass the torch. I would be okay with some kind of a revival of like young Indiana Jones, like some version of that. I don't want pass the torch to Shia LaBeouf or Chris Pratt or
what if it
Taron
was
Egerton or
young Indiana
else.
Jones and young Sheldon.
Yeah, he just gets
and young Rock.
Right. He's just, well, we watched The Flash and we thought what this character needs is
that's what he's a time travel for. It's a multiverse where it's just. Right. Young, yeah, young Sheldon, young Indiana Jones, young Rock, and young Jeezy, and we are just solving crime. Thoughts, bazinga! We got a strike while the iron's hot. Young Sheldon's only going to be young for another like 14 and a half weeks.
Right. We get to teenage Sheldon's going to be rough. The hormones. I don't know what else you've got, Kent, but I want to make sure we talk about the ending and kind of the send off for this character. I thought that the whole thing of him, like, I want to stay in the past, moving into, I thought it was really funny to have her just punch him and knock him out. I thought that was a good, that was a good bit. But to move from that to he wakes up back in 1969 and then has Marion and Sala come back in and everything. I found that very moving. I was prepared for Marion to come back at the end of this. The way it happened, I don't know if it necessarily took me by surprise. I had, this is similar to my experience with the Fablemans of like not being able to separate what is this movie and what is this career that has mattered so much to me over my, oh, you know, over my life. It was similar here where it's like, I felt like I was having like a midlife crisis almost of this is the last time I'm going to see this character on screen. Yeah. And this is a Mount Rushmore character, for my life. And he's not going to be doing this anymore. And moreover, the man is 80 years old and, you know, hopefully we have, you know, 10 or 15 or 20 more years of Harrison Ford continuing to do Harrison Ford things and being on screen, but we don't know that. And then also like, I mean, I had a huge crush on Karen Allen when I was 12, 10 or 12 or whatever. And I love her. I think she's just so charismatic and wonderful. And so like having all of these things happen on screen and these themes taking place mixed with my own some nostalgia and some just emotion for these characters and these people and stuff. It was a very touching and kind of bittersweet ending for me. But I don't know if I'm in the minority on that or if you guys felt any of that as well.
Yeah, I thought the ending, the setup was fantastic. As soon as they get in like the cave, Dionysus cave, right? And that started to feel like, okay, this is Indiana Jones again. This feels like I'm back in Raiders. Once they find the tomb and they see the eagle with the propeller and they open the thing and he's got the watch on, I'm like, where's this going? And the setup and payoff of those two moments I thought was goosebump worthy, you know, like to have them crash the plane and Archimedes find the watch. Like, I thought the bringing that back around was very well done. Them going into back in time, I was like, okay, this is happening, but I was like, I cannot wait for them to go back in time, you know? And when they do, that shot of the plane coming through the clouds, I thought was really great. Yeah. The reveal of them, of what timeline they were in, where, you know, the Nazis think they're in World War II, and you see these ships firing at each other, and you're like, okay, they're in World War II. And then it cuts back to Indy's reveal of this is ancient Rome was so good.
It's great.
And then that huge wide swooping shot of ancient Rome war, and you're like, oh my God, we are in it. Like, you feel like you went back in time. And that was just like, oh man, that was so good. I didn't think, like, if you told me that on paper, like beforehand, oh, they're going to go back to ancient Rome, I'm like, there's no way in hell I will like that.
Yes.
But same. The way they did it, I was like, dude, this is awesome. This somehow works. And I thought that was
thinking
great.
The exact same thing. I think if you would have shown me this pitch, I don't think I would have been in on it. I think I'm like, guys, we got to, I don't know about going back in time, y'all. Like, maybe we need to find something.
We
got to
cast Rachel McAdams.
But it worked. Yeah, it worked really well for me.
She is in.
Okay, now we're talking. Now we're talking.
She actually was one of the Roman soldiers.
Yeah.
I had to get it on her resume. She just showed up on set. They threw an outfit on her so she could put it on her IMDb.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was all great. And then Indy's emotion of like, I've studied my whole life about this and now I'm witnessing it. I want to be here. There was a moment where I was like, oh, he might stay. What if they leave him back in? What's going to happen? And I was like, surely they can't do that. And then they didn't. And you go back to the future, so to speak, and you're in an alternate timeline with Marion. I thought that was a great way to do it.
Yeah. I loved it. I loved it.
It kind of ended quickly, though, after that. It was like, boom.
Yeah, over. Sure. They didn't linger. Yeah, for sure. Richard, what about you? How'd that ending work for you?
It worked for me. It felt sort of delayed, and it felt like a little epilogue-y.
Okay.
But not to make me hate it. But it had some a sniff of epilogue to it. The whole movie did, but and in parts, but that's probably because through no fault of this movie, it follows 30 years later a very seminal trilogy. So it's like built to do that. So I understand that, and I accept it. So yeah, but I thought it worked for me fine. I was as much as I can be at this stage of my life, appropriately kind of touched and twinkled and moved on.
Okay. That's fair. I think that's fair. I'm ready to grade this. Do you have anything else you want to talk about before we get out of here?
My last note I've been saying for the end.
Yeah.
Two, actually. One was the melting wax thing. That was an Indiana Jones moment. I was like,
that was really cool.
Those are the moments that I remember where it's just like, you think it's one thing and then Indiana Joneses it and it's something completely different. Mm-hmm. I loved that.
Yeah.
And
I did too. There's another moment or two too where he kind of got that little twinkle in his eye. You know,
he's like, I know this. You know, I've read about this. Yeah. That kind of thing is great.
Yeah.
And the last thing, gotta say, the John Williams cue on when he says it belongs in a museum. I mean, I almost started tearing up. Like, that is last time. Oh man, that
was
great.
And
they didn't overdo the indie theme too, which I thought would. They could maybe hammer home a little too hard. I thought just write them out.
Yeah, agree. Yeah, maybe the best movie score ever.
One of my favorites. That and Jurassic Park.
That's one of the one's really John Williams story about how he wrote it is so good. Where he's like, I came up with two themes, so instead of throwing one out, I just combined them into one song. So he had this one incredible da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and then he had that obviously the opening fanfare. Dun, 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 dun. You know, it's like he just put both of them in that. Man, what an incredible human being. Just
you know,
like
one's great.
Beethoven level, man. So good.
the Pirates one, which we're going to talk about in our throwback later.
Sure. Yeah,
it is. We watched it. I was like, man, this score is so good all the way through.
It is. Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, good teaser for the throwback. Pirates of the Caribbean this week.
Similar kind of tonal movie. I remember watching that in theaters and going, oh, this is as close as I'll ever be to seeing Indiana Jones in the theater. Even though they're very different. I felt tonally they were cousins.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. All right, let's grade this thing. Richard, going to you first.
Man, this is the honest to God, I will be sincere here for a moment. One of the harder grades I've ever had to come up with in the going on 11 years of doing this. And we will obviously retire in 58 years. I'm going to give this right down the middle a solid B.
Okay. Kent?
This is the best compliment I can give this film, is that it's firmly in the top four Indiana Jones movies. So I'm giving it a B+.
Okay. For me, I'm kind of with you, Richard Lee. It's kind of hard to...
There's again, some moments similar in this that are just spectacular, and then there's some moments
where it's like scuba indie. Yeah, I'm like,
right.
Okay. Yeah, like Uncharted version of... Yeah,
Uncharted. God, that was a movie.
But was the...
Coen Brothers Masterpiece.
Similar to Feywinds, I'm just having a real hard time separating... It's like, I think to me, the grade is better than the sum of its parts in some ways, because it just... It fits. It does what I wanted this movie to do. It sends off this incredible iconic character in the right way, and it was just, there's a part of me that just like, it was just nice to see that on screen again and see. So I don't know. I'm gonna give it a. I'll go high. I'll give it an A. I'll just give it a straight A. Nice. I think I could come down to an A-, but I'll stick to my.
I'm gonna call myself out of my joke. I was thinking Unbroken, not Uncharted, with that Coen Brothers reference.
It's okay, but we all miss some, you know.
Still fantastic joke by me, but no, I'm kidding.
It was.
No,
okay. All right, that's good. So this is Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. We will see. Does not have strong competition at the box office this week, so I think it has a chance of winning.
We've got Joyride second week. Well, I don't know, Insidious, man. That's the kind of weird stuff.
That's true. Forgot about Insidious. Could be. I think this has pretty good word of mouth. Like, I've talked to several people who saw it who I don't think are indie truthers, you know, and so, but they all really dug it and seemed to have a good time with it. So hopefully, we'll see. We'll see what
it does. It deserves to do better than it did.
Yeah, because it's dead after that. Because then it's
once Mission Impossible hits, it's going to make like $2 million
it's
weekend if that
it's over. So. It's over at that point. So we'll see.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right. Before we get out of here, let's do a quick weekly recommend.
Weekly recommend.
Richard, what's your weekly recommend, my friend?
I'm going to recommend a show I've recommended before, but just wrapped, and it's like the last season that probably matters. So if you haven't watched it live, actually, you know what? This is tough. I might change it. I was going to recommend. I'll do a dual recommend. I was going to say this season of Top Chef was great, but I finished The Bear.
Ooh.
So we'll go all cooking. We'll just talk cooking. We'll go Top Chef for real, The Bear for fictional. I mean, have you finished season two yet, Brian?
Haven't started The Bear yet. Probably.
I won't spoil.
I bet I will this weekend. It's all binge, right? Like, it's all out?
Yeah, it's all out. Have you seen anything? Like, any? Do you know any cameos or anything?
There was something that popped up in my feed, and I was so on it of like, nope, and I got through it before I really put it in my brain of who it was. So far I've avoided it, but I told Lindsay My Weekly Wickerman is going to be another TV show we ended up watching before The Bear, but I told her as we were starting
Nathan for you.
We watched, I was like, yeah, I was like, we have to, we have to watch The Bear soon because I do not want this to get spoiled for me.
Okay. Yeah. There's a cameo in there for like a whole episode that is going to, up your in my alley that is like, couldn't be better. So enjoy.
Awesome. Sweet.
See episode 6 or 7. I can't remember, but somewhere in there.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. Like that. Good. Yeah. Good.
But the top chef season, Padma's leaving. Brian and I are mourning.
It's a tough one for us.
Yeah. It's a tough one for us, but we'll see.
She's so good. She's such a good host, and she's maybe the hottest woman ever.
Yeah, it's a real.
Just unbelievable.
The only person that's as hot as her is Tom Colicchio. So at least we still have that.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. Good recommends. I've got maybe 4 episodes left of Top Chef. I got bogged down.
So did we. We started it late. That's why. I mean, I think that thing ended about a month ago. But I'm just we just finished it this week. So
I know who won because it was too long to avoid that spoiler.
He's a freak, dude.
He is.
He's the best I've ever seen on there. I think
he's
only spoiled the sex of that person. But
yeah, he might be my favorite contestant.
Yeah,
ever. He's unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. Good recommends. I like that. I like that, Richard. Kent, what's your weekly recommend, my friend?
I'm going to recommend a documentary that I watched on YouTube, so it should be easily accessible to the listener. I remembered this story.
It was on Don Jr.'s page. Yeah.
It's called Loose Change. Go look it up. This is one that I remembered this story from like 10 years ago. I'm like, whatever happened to that? And I remembered somebody buying the movie rights, and I never, and obviously the movie hasn't come out about it. I was like, what was that story? So I looked for a documentary on it. Do you guys remember the Barefoot Bandit?
New Hampshire.
It was Northwest actually, like Washington.
Okay.
Canada way.
They like broke into all the cabins and stuff?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I do.
So this documentary is called The Legend of the Barefoot Bandit, A Teenage Fugitive on the Run. I can't believe this is not a movie. I mean, this would be the perfect Steven Spielberg, Catch Me If You Can style. I don't know. It's an incredible story. It's got all the elements you want, the emotion, the obviously the thrills. And this documentary is really well done, though. It's got a lot of animation, and the animation is really well done in it to kind of tell the story. So definitely check out this documentary if you want to know more about the story. But I just can't believe it. Apparently 20th Century Fox bought the rights to the book in 2012. So there's a chance that it's sitting in Disney's IP and they have no idea. So I don't know. I think this movie, you get the right like young star in the lead.
Mm-hmm.
This, I'm telling you, could be like best picture.
Ezra Miller, maybe like level. An Ezra Miller type.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
But this would have been like the perfect Shia 2011, like
nice,
you know, movie. Okay. My gosh. You guys check this out. Legend of the Barefoot Bandit.
Sweet.
You'll like it. True crime.
Sweet.
All that kind of stuff.
I read a book a few years ago, called The Strange. I just looked up The Stranger in the Woods. That's what I was thinking of at first. He's either New Hampshire or Maine, but it's the same kind of thing. Except it wasn't a kid. It was like a dude who kind of, I think, I want to say he kind of busted out on the stock market and was like, all right, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
And just moved into the woods and basically lived off of breaking into people's cabins and stuff during the winter, and was there for, and was just became like kind of a local legend, and eventually got caught and I think put in for sort of jail. But was an interesting read. So cool. I like that. I'll check that out. Yeah.
It's like the Frank Abagnale story for real.
Okay. Yeah.
Apparently
yeah,
that I mean, guy was full of crap.
Yeah, sounds awesome. Sounds awesome. I remember a little bit about the story. It was crazy. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to recommend a TV show, series that's on Netflix. It's called Muscles and Mayhem, an unauthorized story of American gladiators.
Is that cool?
Look, I'm sure it's total bullcrap because it is all from
I need the that nostalgia hit right now, dude. I need that serotonin.
Yeah, dude. It's
Man, I remember standing up.
I
so
loved
late
it though. I mean,
that.
It was most of those Netflix sports documentaries are so poorly. Sure. They so badly want to be 30 for 30, and they're just, it's like, there's no concept of is what this person's saying, is it true or not? You know, they just kind of run with everything. But this one felt like it was relatively safe on that front. But yeah, they like, it's nitro and laser and ice and storm and zap and a few others. And it's awesome, man. It's five episodes.
I know you're a Gladiators guy. This is where we kind of meet, because Kent and I like wrestling, and you hate wrestling,
right?
I mean, we don't like,
because Gladiators is real, bro.
we but, watch wrestling once a year, but you shame us, and I didn't realize.
Imagine Brian.
I remember being dunked on.
I can't
hard
believe
by my mom
one of our best friends of the pod is literally writing the storylines of wrestling, and Brian's still not in.
Yeah,
it's like, imagine if Richard was doing it, and you're like, not for me, not interested. Imagine wrestling as a giant movie.
If I have a bit, I am holding
a giant, a one long movie that's lasted 30 years, and you see one scene a week for 3 hours, right? That's to me wrestling.
Oh, sorry.
It's so good. That's so funny. They brought back American Gladiators.
They have,
and it flopped hard. Like Arnold hosted it, I think. And
I can't remember. It was gone before I even like.
Yes, it was. It was like canceled before anyone even knew it came back. And I saw so much nostalgia going around for this series and stuff. Like, they should bring back American Gladiators. Like, they did, and no one cared. And The Rock tried to do this too with like some. Remember, it was like Army Games or what was it? I don't know. Some kind of. Spin
2008,
on this.
And it was hosted by Hulk Hogan and Layla Ali.
Hulk Hogan. I thought it was Arnold. My bad.
Layla Ali. Wow. Yeah.
Arnold could probably bring it back.
Yeah. Let's do it. Good. We're in the middle of a little turn towards an Arnold song.
My favorite thing in Dodgeball is Blade, Laser, and Blazer. I thought we're taken straight from American Gladiators.
Yeah. It's really fun. It's like I said, five episodes. It moves pretty quick. They're relatively short episodes too. You know, it's like 38 minutes, something like that. So you can blow through them pretty quick.
That was good, but it had nothing on Global Guts with Mike O'Malley. The ultimate.
That's what we do. We bring back.
We bring back Global Guts with Mike O'Malley. Yeah.
No, we bring back American Gladiators
with Mike O'Malley. Can you imagine the nostalgia hit that would be for our generation?
And then they climb the aggro crag at the end.
Yes. Now you're freaking talking, Richard. Dude, the ultimate matchup. American Guts.
Yeah, exactly.
There we go.
There's a lot of stuff with that one, but I won't. Talking.
Dude, that is the pitch of the century right there for TV.
This belongs to us. You can't take it. Nobody can take this.
You know what's weird is that, you know, we don't see enough of those trophies out there. The gut, you know? Can I feel like you?
Yes,
have that.
Seriously.
They pop up on eBay. They pop up on eBay. They? I'm not joking. Yeah, they do. But they're.
I don't know how you don't see that at like a
most of them, like the light doesn't work anymore. They're like busted. But they pop up every now and then.
Man.
Wow.
The ultimate child. Yeah.
So I'm going to start shopping for Christmas presents for you guys right now. Start.
Can I promote one thing, Brian, before we get out of here?
Yeah.
I have I have a pod documentary dropping on the 10th Monday.
Yeah, you do. Pumped
that I've been working hard on for, I don't know, a couple months here since the season or the draft wrapped up. It's for the football nerds out there, talking about the Shanahan offense, the NFL, Kyle Shanahan, the coach of the 49ers, along with Mike McDaniel, American Treasure, future American Treasure, Mike McDaniel. Sean McVay, Matt LaFleur, those guys are kind of the youngest, most interesting offensive minds in the NFL right now. And it's just about their dynamic. They're all best friends together. Now they're not. And there's a lot of stuff there. So hope that if that interests you, you'll check it out. It's going to be on the Athletic Football Show podcast on Monday the 10th, or on the New York Times audio app if you have that and you're a subscriber to that. But check that out. Let me know if you dig it. And that's for the football nerds that might listen to the show. And we have a Netflix documentary coming soon that I can maybe say. So nice. Look forward to that.
Nice. Awesome. Love that. Very cool. All right. This has been fun. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening to us talk about Indiana Jones 4 as we close out the chapter of this iconic character, this great series. It's been a lot of fun talking with it, with you boys about it. If you like what you heard, if you want more Mad About Movies, if you would maybe potentially like to hear us talk in depth about the previous trilogy in this series, I want you to go to madaboutmoviespodcast.com/VIP. Sign up for that VIP feed. It's $5 a month. You get access to a throwback or retrospective episode every single week, plus literally hundreds of episodes in our back catalog now, as well as a whole bunch of other goodies, including access to our exclusive Discord, where you can talk about movies and music and dogs and everything that your little brain can imagine all day long with other fan members just like you. MadAboutMoviesPodcast.com/VIP. Check that out. Back next week. I don't really know what we're going to do next week. We'll kind of play it by ear. Maybe a big news episode. If you go to that VIP feed, you're going to get that Pirates of the Caribbean episode that Richard mentioned earlier. Lots of fun stuff happening over there, so check that out. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. We'll see you at the cinema. Goodbye.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me ya-ya. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
They're calling again. Oops.